You can have spiritual experience, cultural immersion, meditation, workshops. Until that part, most of festivals were just music and vibes.
Are you in the process of creating something huge and you want to understand how others have done it? Or have you already found success and still feel something is missing? Then this podcast is for you. Welcome to the Alchemist Lounge, a podcast where Alex Atwood chats with top performers to discover habits, routines, and alchemy that you can put to work in your own life.
Hey, everyone. I am so excited to be talking to a dear friend of mine. And let me tell you a little bit about my friend, Aaron Cruz. So when you think about the term MC and DJ, probably what comes to mind is someone in the hip hop field. But what Aaron is a true MC in the sense of a master of ceremony. So let me tell you a little bit about Aaron. He's an expert festival organizer. He's a psychedelic facilitator. He's somebody that continues to improve and expand in what he does. And after a life-changing psychedelic experience in 2008, Aaron pivoted his goals from earning his PhD to paving the way for transformative psychedelic use. Aaron is an alchemist in the highest order. And like me, he's a third wave certified psychedelic coach and proud father of three young daughters. So I'm so excited to see you and to be talking to you today, my brother. Welcome to the show.
Oh, man. Thank you so much, Alex. It is an absolute honor and pleasure to be here, bro.
Awesome, brother. I can't wait to dig in. So let's jump right in. Tell me about where you grew up and what were some of the early experiences that you remember from your childhood?
Yeah, absolutely. So originally grew up in Jersey, Central Jersey, about 30 minutes out of NYC. So we were frequent flyers on the metro train heading into New York. And it's interesting. I grew up very fast. They often say that city kids are the ones that get the most trouble. I would disagree. I'd say the suburb kids with a little bit more money that are able to kind of make a little things happen out there where things went down. So in Central Jersey, you know, it was suburbia. I was in an environment where I had the biggest house in the neighborhood, and it was just under a quarter acre. Mm-hmm. Just enough for one full arm throw of a football. So always had tons of kids at our house, which was really special because my parents knew everybody. There was a deep respect and connection there. I was big into graffiti culture. So I actually got kicked out of one school for muralizing the front of it.
Really?
Once another school, it was a hard and interesting transition. But one of the things that I had been able to do is that these schools were arch rivals forever, for no reason that anybody even remembered. But by going to that other school, I quickly made a lot of great friends. I was like, hey, you might like my other friends from my other school. So for the first time in memory, and I actually hold this as a place of pride, those two schools stopped being rivals. And we ended up having an awesome bridge of fellowship that occurred across. You know, maybe it was part of the jungle juice parties I used to throw that helped that ease the edges there. But doing gathering with a purpose was always something that I wanted. It wasn't just about getting loose and debauched. Is about seeing the connection of people. And that's always stuck with me.
Yeah. So early on, you were somebody that was sort of the hub of bringing that little community together. Did you ever think that your career in terms of how you would make money would revolve around that?
No, not until later on, after I made some real pivots when I was in my kind of graduate program, that I realized I always, because even when I was in college, I was in a fraternity and I was main host of all these gatherings. And it wasn't just five-story beer bongs. You know, I was trying to do cultural things. I was inviting a lot of different types of communities together to make these melting pots of experience. So I realized that's kind of what I've always done.
So going into 2008,
yeah,
what did you think your life was going to be about? And then what happened in 2008 that changed everything and put you in a new direction?
Yeah. So heading into that experience, despite being doing all the parties, I was always a very avid academic. I was very devoted to learning. I just loved learning about different traditions, different cultures. So I became very immersed in this program. It's called McNair. While I was at West Virginia University, it was my undergrad. And they gave opportunities for first generation and BIPOC students to get full scholarships for graduate school. So I was chosen amongst eight. That's actually where I met my wife. She's in the science and physics side of things, and I was in the anthropology history side of things. So nice counterbalance there. But I traveled around the country. I did presentations. I was learning about things, and I was like, maybe I'm going to be a scholar. So I got this great opportunity. I got a full ride fellowship to the Ohio State University. And when I went there, I just started really getting a sense of some of the, and it's not all like this, but there's some programs, some different things that there's a little bit more of an oppressive iron wall academic approach where it's like the deans, they wrote their papers at a certain particular time. If your work is kind of refuting against them, you better come with more firepower and allies than ever before, because who are you, young upstart, to challenge my work? So I started to experience a little bit of that iron curtain of wasn't able to speak freely in some of my research. I needed a bazillion citations to even make a point for them to be considered even legitimate. And I started getting depressed because I'm like, I can't express myself. I'm a person that loves to paint with brushes with my words, not just chisel into the historiography of the situation. So I had an entirely full master's thesis at the time, spent I don't know how much hours and time on this thing, presented it, and it was essentially told, your voice is too present in this particular thesis. You're not supposed to have an opinion until you have at least a graduate degree. And I didn't know where to go with that. It's like, there's like 300 citations in this. It's like, I feel like I've covered the collective voice. And at the time, my work as well was 16th century, looking at cultures in South America that were using ceremony, ritual, rites of passage, initiation, plant medicines to experience and express how they connect to the world around them, their cosmology. And I could use citations from Franciscan missionaries, but they don't know what's going on there. So I was moving mostly with elders and anecdotal stories and using that as my work, but it was stomped down. And I was at a crossroads. So that was a couple months before I was getting my degree at the time. And I ended up saying, you know what, let's go to a music festival. So I went to a music festival. I've already had a couple of...
It's a good way to solve any dilemma.
Yeah, exactly. Let's throw that out. Let's take a side. Let's take a break. Yeah. I'd already been cursorily using LSD at different times throughout my life. It was starting to open up a lot of questions, a lot of doors. Well, in that particular experience, I took a pretty high dose. Non-advisable for a music environment, about four hits of probably a high blotter of whatever it was. But what ended up transpiring in that, and I'll give a pause here in a second as well, but I started really looking into people, really looking at the people around me and starting to perceive as like, man, we have so many masks. We have our traumas. We have our baggage. We have our persona. We have all these things described, but every person I looked in their eyes, they wanted to be held. They wanted to be appreciated. They wanted to be heard. I felt a sense of lostness. Like, man, what happened to our ability to just connect openly, organically, genuinely, without having to create a facade? And so all these things were going through, but it went deeper. Then I started seeing the nature and world around me. Oh, wow, this is alive, the breath of life. And then started moving into a space of, I'm not quite sure, who am I? Where does Aaron begin? And then that was a whole thing. So by the time I was on that hill in an Humphreys McGee concert, I was more of a masculine expression of consciousness than Aaron Cruz on the hill. I was just completely absorbed. The universal monad of the experience, which was one of the most revealing, powerful, transcendental moments and terrifying situations I've ever been in my life, for sure.
And so you were at a concert, right? You were going through one direction in your life, right? And so you took a high dosage of LSD, things opened up, you realized what?
Yeah. So several things. So the big realizations that come out of there, they're kind of like three or four fold. One of them was, at the time, my partner, Renee, was really my anchor to reality. I can't even do anything less than that. Like, literally, she sat there and her eyes were the only things that kept me probably from, I don't know, borderline psychosis. How oceanic.
This is during the experience.
During the experience.
Okay, yes.
I'm looking at her and she's just like, I understand you're going into a deep place and I am not going anywhere. So that day I decided mid-experience somewhere, I'm marrying that woman. Because if you can stand here while I'm pretty much amorphously becoming the universe, then what else could I ask for? So that was a big part of that moment there.
You decided to get married.
I get married. Boom. Like right on that hill.
Got it.
Number two was that I want to create containers. As you say, I embrace festivals and ceremony. They have been for thousands of years through civilizations being used as cultural epicenters to share, to exchange, to dance, to revel, to honor the foundation of people's beliefs and foods and culture. Like, that's what those spaces are. So I feel that bringing that intentionality back to that space is critical. And so I decided there, I want to make this type of experience. Places where radical creativity and authenticity is the way. We have entertainment, we have arts, we have people dancing, expression. I can't think of anything better than doing that. So boom, decide I want to become a producer that day, like right on the side of that hill. And the third part of it was that I can't deny the spiritual potency of this world. I was always dancing around spirituality, but I was kind of like religious, spiritual, curious. At that point, I was like, the force is alive and well. And magic is alive and well. It's in the heart of everything I experience. I just think that we live in a space of somewhat amnesia when our lens doesn't perceive of the subtlety and the nuance and the dance of symbiotic relationships with the natural world and us. But that's not how it always was. So I'm going to be a lifelong mystic after this experience, because I feel that this world is alive and vibrant, and there's things that are so beyond the scope of what we can measure, but that doesn't make them any less real and any less impactful in my life. So boom, full spiritual devotion on that hillside from that point forward. And that part became an absolute fundamental for my integration process, is learning how to actually calibrate that experience within the context of a spiritual initiation. So those three things really hit me just that day, that one of them would have been life-changing. All three, I was an entirely new trajectory at that point.
Yes, the three big points, marriage, spirituality, career, they all sort of came in. And it sounded like then the alchemist was also born, because it sounds like the universe started to support everything you wanted to do. So let's jump forward just a bit. So you've produced 11 consecutive sold out festivals, over 10,000 people with over 3,000 performers from all around the world. What does it take to create experiences like that? And tell me how, after you started to find your path on that hill, right? How did everything start showing up to where suddenly you start producing sold out festivals all over the world? How many years did that take? And kind of build that journey for me a little bit.
Yeah. So it wasn't a quick pivot, faster than what most people say, but yeah, I left there, and I don't advise this either. After a high dose experience, don't make any hard moves for 2 weeks. Just take a little bit of time, because I got out of there and I quit my master's program the next day, pretty much. Like, I'm done, not coming back in. That 90-page paper, done. And I mean, it would have been cool to stick out for 2 more months and get at least that master's degree, but I was already done pretty much, but I wasn't feeling it. And I had to move forward. So big decision. But after that, I realized I had a dear friend who was a part of Papadozio, is a pretty good progressive jam band. And they were thinking about curating a first experience. I'm like, look, let me throw my hat in the ring. I could bring all these skills that I've had. Put me in. Let me know what's going on. So really, we grassrooted the hell out of that thing. It was all swashbuckling, shoestring, budget. And we brought 600 people out. We had a nice stage. We had a little art exhibit. We created a teepee. That was like the very rudimentary foundation. It was a lot of intention, a lot of love. Not everything started on time. Definitely underestimated porta potty needs, all those kind of things. But it started the rolling of like, we can do this. Like, with ingenuity and the right people at the helm, and we can start creating something. So this was the birth of what would be considered many places the transformational festivals. You have your Envision in Costa Rica, you have your Sonic Bloom, you have your Lightning in a Bottle in the West Coast. There's a few that have survived over the years, but that was the idea that a festival can be, could have artistic experience, could have spiritual experience, cultural immersion, meditation, workshops. Until that part, most of festivals were just music and vibes. Nothing wrong with that, but we want to bring a lot more intention to that. So I started making that first year, 600 people, second year, 1200, third year, 3000, fourth year, 5000. But even at that time, I was like bartending, co-producing, doing an online visionary art gallery, like just doing everything I can to keep that focus in there. It wasn't until 2013, again, I was hitting this crossroads, like I can't freaking do all these little things and create what I truly can create. So I took my whole resume and I flipped it. I was like, these are all the artistic and creative things I do. This is my true talent here. On the bottom, I list my, I was a GM at FedEx and I was my degrees and all kinds of stuff like that. So I ended up then looking out and seeing where in the country are people looking for artistic or production directors. I found Asheville, North Carolina, LEAF Community Arts. It's a festival that goes twice a year. It's international, 10 or 15 different countries, every event, and all the money in returns goes toward music and arts education locally and in 10 different countries. That's incredible. Not only am I facilitating festivals, but all the money goes to nurturing the creative dynamic with kids. So serendipitously, this is a wild story. I send my full portfolio package just on a whim to the executive director. I had a couple people that I knew, an artist here, I knew a community member there, that they sent like letters saying, hey, just pay attention to this dude. He's really solid in what he does. That morning, so it goes in an email. That morning, the other performing arts director, old Billy Jack, comes in and is like, hey, I'm an architect by trade. I can't do this anymore. I'm going to give my 2 weeks. And I'm like, what are we going to do? It's like, we got a festival. We got shit going on. And it's like, boom, she opens up the meals. Like, here's Aaron Cruz. Okay, full portfolio. Okay, everything that we're looking at doing. So amazingly, again, as you said, the universe supported my embracing of what my true gifts were, the timing of what that was. And boom, I got the opportunity within 3 months to become the artistic director for that whole organization and on my way to Asheville.
Wow. Okay, so let's do a timeline here. So between 2008 and 2013, you accomplished quite a bit in terms of starting to really build a foundation. And you really understood that in 2013, things needed to change a bit. Like, and so you executed on that. And so what showed up?
Yeah, so in that duration too, I want to add an important element.
Please do.
Yeah, because there was a very difficult time coming back from that first experience where I had no orientation that that type of consciousness was possible. So I actually got into a period of pretty rough narcissism where I was like, I know what's going on out there, guys. You could keep doing your thing out there and I'm going to know what's up and inform you. And so I ostracized some relationships there. It became pretty dicey.
Judgmental, it sounds like.
Absolutely. Judgmental, yeah. Hypercritical. And that is a very real thing. You know, often the rubber band effect, they say, is like, boom, if you embrace the sense that, yes, we are all creators. We are all capable of these amazing things. We're all at different parts of the process. It took me some time to figure that out. For me, I was like, well, I don't hear anybody else going on this experience. So maybe I'm the chosen one. It was one of those moments. Dangerous, wily, but a little bit of humbling slap from my wife.
Yeah. Especially since you're this festival organizer, you're bringing all of these things together and suddenly it could easily boost your ego into the stratosphere. And,
yeah.
So was there a particular situation? Was there a particular thing that happened to you that sort of took you down a couple notches?
Yeah, there was actually. I was strolling with my Golden Dawn Kabbalah book, like across the hut, like reading passages and whatnot. And my wife was like, hey, you want to go see a movie? A good movie. And I was like, I don't have time for mundane movies. And she just looks at me like, look, I'm done with that. It's like, you need to figure out that life is about living. Life is not about you being the ivory tower, being the boss of your cosmos. Life is about enjoying the people you're with and making sure that they know you care. You come back down these stairs and show me that you care, or we're going to figure something out here that's not going to be pleasant, pretty much, kind of situation. And I snapped the book and something really hit me that I was like, I'm fucking aloof. I'm not like, it's great to be absorbed in a particular path, but I was watching everything go by my life with a high nose from that experience and not integrating that experience. And that's why having guidance and being and grounding that in and orientation is so freaking important. And a big reason why I do that support now, but that experience like really jolted me. And I was like, okay, I'm not quite sure where to go here, but I need to quit the BS of me thinking that I'm above things. And that was a process. It was a healing process. I had a lot of apologies and flowers to send out and things to do. I'm so grateful for it. But yeah, that kind of moved me into place. And then when I became in the orientation of I'm a servant, that's what really hit me in 2013. Is like, I just want to serve. I just want to create spaces where people can have beautiful, transformative experience. They don't even have to freaking know I did it. I could be back there and behind and just smiling and be like, oh yeah. And that energy, I think that's when the real flow and support allowed me to become into this on a mainline, on a mainstream.
Sustainable, pure loving energy, right? They say that behind every breakthrough is an ego trip. And that sounds very accurate to me. Wow. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about what you see as the future of Aaron Cruz in his festival organizing, planning, facilitating life. Where do you see the direction of your career and I guess sort of these transformative festivals in general? Where do you see them going?
Now, as I'm moving forward, COVID, the 50th festival I was about to have, that didn't happen. We tried to bump it forward, didn't happen again. I had to leave that space for a little bit. That's when I really, along this whole time, I was taking sacramental entheogenics and guiding small ceremonies in a really intimate way, underground and whatnot. So, but at this time, so I moved back. What was the origin space? I'm going back to the medicine and letting the medicine inform me. I'm giving up on controlling what's next. I'm going to listen. I'm going to feel. And that's what really brought me into the coaching work, the third wave program, and having that one-on-one impact. Because that's one of the things too, is like, I haven't been close with people, intimate, in a long time. I mean, it's one thing to have lots of people and doing the thing, but those genuine connections of transformation, that my soul appreciated that and wanted that. So I went back to the one-on-ones, doing that, then looking at small
Is that the Spark Transformational Coaching?
Yes. Got so that's it. Transformational coaching. That's the life force that came from that realization. And there's definitely some stories around where I landed on that, but I'm so grateful to hold.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Let's talk about your transformational coaching. So tell me about Spark Transformational Coaching. What could someone expect to receive going through this program?
Yes. So Spark Transformational Coaching is really embracing the element of rites of passage in the psychedelic experience as a catalyst for transformation and change. It's not the panacea. It's not the, I'm guaranteeing, get out of this experience, everything changed life. But if you're very mindful, I do a preparation arc for several weeks. We go into an immersion. We do an integration arc for several weeks. But how it's really embraced is that, look, you want to make a repivot. This is a wild time. You want to focus and hone down. What is your purpose? What is your passion? What's your drive for wanting to create? Let's get that essence in there. And then how much are you perceiving what you're capable of? The one powerful thing psychedelics all the time is give you that wide view, give you that zoom back. You know, my world was kind of right here. All of a sudden, I have this huge palette. And what I thought was not within my purview, within my capacity, within my aptitude, it's all there. It's all there. It's upon what are you willing to do to embrace that potency within, and then do the daily micro steps, the daily focused, devoted steps to that macro impact. Mm. You know, so I always learn that too, is so doing festivals. Like if you look at it, I gotta curate something for 10,000 people. Well, what am I gonna do? Like way overwhelming. But if it's every day, hey man, I'm devoted to making that call. I'm devoted to making that connection. I'm gonna make this small step. All of a sudden, festival's there, smooth, flowing, and it just shows up. You know, so that's really part of what that transformational spark experience is. Let's find that fire again. Let's fan that ember to a flame. And then let's use a medicine in a very intentional, very ancient way. Let's go into ceremony. Let's don our attire. Let's treat this like this is your moment of life to embrace something bigger, bigger than all of us. And then now let's step through that experience, carrying our torch and how we want to change things in your life and those ripples of impact. Know that they matter and honor that process.
So as we're wrapping up, wanted to do something with you. Have you ever heard of What's Your Word? Can you even see this? What's Your Word? I'm just going to pick a random. So to be very gestalt, I'm going to pick a random question from here, and we're going to see what came up. All right. Ah, I like this a lot. So I don't know if you can see that. It's probably backwards, but it says, well, you can't see. See, it keeps disappearing. Well, I'm just going to read it. Who are your heroes?
Mm-hmm. Who are my heroes?
I love that one.
Yeah, you know, I love that one too, you know, because in some levels, I could look at the greater scope and say, you know, historical figures that are making a major impact or things like that in the world. But for me, heroes has always been honest, integral, authentic, ordinary folk that have transcended what people say is possible in their lives by just being really devoted to being of service. And so that wonderful things about third wave experience that I've had, and one of the wonderful things about this whole movement in general, is that there is this conception that you need a certain amount of power, you need a certain amount of authority, you need a certain amount of all these things to make shifts in this world. And that's not necessarily true. Like it requires you simply being extremely devoted to having an impact on whatever's right in front of you and understanding that that can change the world. That can absolutely change. You can change the heart of one person through being a genuine ally and friend, and they can touch one other, and the ripple and the ripple and the ripple, and boom, all of a sudden, that's what catalyzes things across the world. And I was watching it in our group, is like, we have so many different walks of life. Your therapist, your PhD, your curandero, your ceremonialist, your event producer, your, you know, providing people with different experiences for job abilities and coaching. All these things are out there. And it's like, you are a hero when you embrace that what you touch matters. It matters. It always does. Always does. And if you take the care and compassion and love to take the time to make sure that person knows it and make sure that you're able to follow through on that, you're changing the world. You know, that's why it's important to look at that, whether it's environmental, all these different things. We are heroes when we embrace that element of ourselves. So it's always hard for me to like pick out that dude crushes it, you know, and I can't if I thought about it for a little while. But yeah. At the end of the day, it's like, hey, man, like I see heroes in front of me all the time. I'm talking to one right now. It's because you have taken the ownership to make a difference and you care about it.
You know? So well said. You articulate things so well, Aaron. It's a pleasure having you on the show. There's so many sound bites we're going to be able to pull. And what you just said about 10 seconds ago will probably be one of them.
Awesome.
You're an incredible human, awesome father with beautiful, adorable daughters. Obviously, a wife that is supportive and stern when she needs to be to kick you out of your any sort of ego trip or judgmental place that we all get into. So, yeah, truly an inspiration. I am looking forward to seeing big things happen, and I'm looking forward to attending. I guess we have a festival coming up here in a couple of months, so we're going to talk about that offline. How can somebody who wants to get in touch with Aaron Cruz, who wants to be part of this project that he's doing in terms of Spark Transformational Coaching or the Psychedelic Passage, how would someone get in touch with you?
Yeah. So if you want to get out to my personal website for coaching, it's thespark.co and the spark with a C. So thespark.co. And there's numerous forms, connection points for you to reach out. And also all my programs are really expressed there in diligence. If you're looking for a psychedelic guided journey experience in the under the realm of harm reduction, so allowing us to create a preparation, integration container, and immersive experience, Psychedelic Passage is incredible. And it's not just me too. There's facilitators across the country. There's 9 of us. They could come to you, you could go to them, but this is really making sure that you are grounded into a safe, mindful container that can help to take that experience on through your life to make a difference. So that's Psychedelic Passage there. And yeah, keep your eyes peeled. I am back in the game. We didn't go back into this too much, but the perfect conditions arose, and I am going to be co-facilitating a beautiful festival called Voyage. It's taking place August 11th through 14th. Won't announce the exact location, but it is out here on the Lower East Coast. And a lot of information is going to be launched in that in the next month. But I'm so excited. The team is perfect. And this is going to be a true transformative container that cares about everybody that comes on that ground. And we will get it in there together for sure. But it's an honor, Alex. Thank you, brother.
I cannot wait to hear more about this. Yeah. Thank you, brother. Thanks for being on the show. And thank you for everything that you bring to the world.
Thanks for listening in to the Alchemist Lounge. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review on Apple iTunes. To catch all the latest from Alex Atwood, you can check out his website at alexatwood.co. Thanks again, and we'll catch you next time at the Alchemist Lounge.